Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erford,
Matt Logan,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are four board-certified music therapists with a mission to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth. Join us each month as we talk shop and share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy. Thanks for stopping by.
Okay, today we have a very special guest, AMTA President-elect Jennifer Geiger, who will be taking over as the president of the AMTA in January. She's here today to talk about a special project, one that has caused quite a bit of emotion and I suppose we could say a charged conversation in various online communities. The topic is music and memory, and that was the program that was introduced and exalted in the film Alive Inside. Have you all seen that?
I have not, actually. I feel like I should because everybody's talking about it, but I have not seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I think I'm afraid to see it. Yeah, Matt, have you?
As I sheepishly take a sip of my cup of coffee, I feel like I've seen it because of all that I've read about it, but this is one of the things that, probably need to do my homework here. But luckily, we've got an expert on this topic, Jennifer.
I was going to say, now I'm really glad Jennifer is joining us this month.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, because of everything I've seen from my music therapy friends and what we're going to be talking about, the emotions, the charge and everything, I want to hear about Jennifer and about this program to really find out what is this, you know, am I getting the right story? Because I'm just learning about this from Facebook, you know, what's the deal? You know, so I'm really glad that you're here, Jennifer, to like, tell me this is the deal.
So no pressure, Jennifer, but welcome to the round table.
This is awesome. You know, I'm so honored to be asked to be a part of this. And it's really interesting that we're talking about the movie and the fact that the three of you haven't seen it. And the reason why I find that interesting is because I think we are finding out so much of life's content in social media, and a lot of how we proceed is based on other people's outlook on certain things. So I'm happy to say that I have seen the movie. It's available, to my knowledge, on Netflix and on Amazon, and I would actually encourage you to watch it. And here's the reason why. It allows you to form your own opinions about the program and about the movie. When I was watching the movie, I know I had some strong emotional reactions myself during certain parts of it, and I know a lot of other people have as well. But what this movie did an excellent job of is showing the state of healthcare for our elderly in our country and really shining a light on the fact that we're doing a disservice to the people who have served us so well, because these are people who have been teachers and doctors and nurses and lawyers and rabbis and ministers and priests and from all different walks of life. And yet now they're in this place where they might be confused. There might be a lot of them. The ratios might not be what we would like. And so the movie does a good job of saying, hey, America, this is how we're treating our elderly. What do you think? So that's why I would encourage you to watch the movie, is because I felt that was the major part of the show. The portions about the music and memory program that they portrayed, I think those are what those are part of what's causing such a visceral reaction for folks. You know, you've got the Henry clip that went viral back in 2012, and it shows this gentleman who has the earphones put on his head with his favorite song, and all of a sudden he comes alive, which is where the phrase "alive inside" comes from. And then, you know, for those of us who are watching the clip, we're looking around at the other people in the room who are interested in what Henry's doing and why is Henry singing all of a sudden? And maybe how come I can't have some of that? And of course, then the next conversation is, well, why can't we just put the music on speakers and let everyone engage? Because that's what we as music therapists do, is we want to engage the people in the room and not just isolate them by putting headphones on. So that's not the purpose of the music and memory program. The purpose of the program, and I'm going to just keep talking about it until you guys interrupt me.
Hey, you're doing great. We'll interrupt. Oh, don't worry.
So Dan Cohen actually founded this this nonprofit organization, I believe in 2010, and I guess I need to double check my information on that, but it's been around for a little while. And the reason he founded it was because he went to visit his dad in some sort of rehab facility and realized that his dad didn't have access to his LPs, right? Okay, who knows what an LP is? He didn't have access to his albums, his CDs, his tapes. And I remember thinking to myself, boy, if I didn't have access to the music I loved that made me feel better, help me go to sleep, help me exercise, I would find that really depressing. It would make me feel very empty. So Dan decided, hey, I want my dad to have his music. I'm going to go home and put everything I can on my iPod and take it into him so he can listen to his own music. Because really, that's probably easier than taking a boombox in and making a mixtape. Because, you know, music therapists, we've been making playlists for decades, whether it was on a tape or a CD, mm-hmm. or now using iPods. So it's not a unique idea. The uniqueness about it is putting music in the hands of people who want it when they want it. This is not a replacement for music therapy or for music therapists by any means. But if you look at how many music therapists there are across our country, we have fewer than 7,000 board-certified music therapists. And think about all the facilities for older adults just in your neighborhood alone. I'm thinking about my city, and I don't work at all of them, but that is my primary focus, is working with older adults. I don't have the time. And so if there's a way for these folks to get access to the music that they love, yes. Especially when you look at folks who do sit by themselves and who are isolated for one reason or another, and to provide them the opportunity of music, if that's something they desire, and that's something that the person providing the music would need to assess. But if they do want it, and to give it to them and to watch the change of that person, I think gives the staff a completely different outlook on the individual. So Jennifer, I think, yes,
go ahead. And then I have a question for you.
That's fine. I think the power of this film is, for example, my parents can go watch this movie and they go, oh my gosh, did you know how music affects people? And I just smile and say, yeah, that's why I'm a music therapist. I see this every day. The movie shows people, everyday people, what we can't seem to do for whatever reason. You know, our sessions are confidential. We respect privacy. And this movie maker got the releases and could show the world, because now the movie is a worldwide release, the effect that music has on people. And I think that's pretty powerful. And I think that's also why this program has been so popular in so many places.
Jennifer, this is Kimberly, and I say that because I don't expect you to recognize our voices right now, except for maybe Max.
maybe.
He's pretty recognizable. You offer a very interesting perspective on this film, and so I'm interested. I mean, that's certainly not the reaction that I've heard and read about from some of my music therapy colleagues. So my question for you, and I don't know if you have an answer to this, but is do you feel that music therapists feel threatened by this movie, and why have some of these reactions been so emotional? Any ideas on that?
Oh, for sure. So one of the biggest challenges in the movie is that, if memory serves, there is maybe a pharmacist who refers to the program, the Music and Memory program, whether directly or indirectly, as music therapy. And I think that makes all of us just cringe because we know that's not accurate. I also think that there are certain times in the movie, I know I had a really strong reaction to a woman who was listening and she got tears in her eyes. I don't know what she was listening to. And I believe it was Dan Cohen who was with her, or whoever asked her the question, said, are those tears of joy? And this woman paused and kind of creased her brow and then said, yes, yes. Mm. And I wanted to call that out so bad because I didn't believe it. I wanted to go in and say, can you tell me about your tears? Can you share what music this is and what it reminds you of? And to find out a little bit more rather than to put that emotion on her. So I know that made me feel very strongly. The other thing that people are misunderstanding is during the credits, it talks about partners in change. And earlier on, I mentioned about the movie does a good job of portraying how our elders are currently cared for. So when it talks about partners in change, wouldn't we all want to see a change in how we're caring for our elders? And in that portion of the credits, it lists musictherapy.org and Andy Farben, who's the executive director of AMTA. And some music therapists have told me, I don't understand why we're partnering with this organization. And so I just want to say that that's not the case at all. It was partners in, yes, we would like to see a change in how the elders are being cared for, not a partnership, something official with the program. So that's a misconception right there. Because in actuality, as this movie was being made, AMTA was sought out. And so I know that Andy Farben, our executive director, and Albie Manis, our director of communications, and possibly other staff at the national office as well, actually got to preview the movie and were given the opportunity to provide feedback. And they saw the clip with the pharmacist, and they said, oh, that could be a real problem for us. Can you please make some changes there? And, you know, Connie Tomeno is a longtime member of our association, and could you possibly refilm her and ask her more questions about music therapy if you're going to talk about music therapy in the movie? And, you know, we know you have Oliver Sacks interviewed as well. And the producer director said, oh, your edits, sure, that's a great idea. They did refilm Connie. Those edits never made it into the final cut of the film. So we did provide feedback. We did request changes. And the movie got made the way the producer and director wanted the movie to get made. So I think we did our best with the I don't know the word I want to use. I think we did the best with what we could in what we were able to offer the changes, and they didn't get made. So now we have the perpetual opportunity to use this movie to talk more about the difference between the clinical music therapy and the opportunity for personalized music listening.
Yeah, and ultimately it wasn't our movie. You know,
exactly.
You know, suggestions, recommendations, but it's like you said, it's the producer and the director who have the final say, and we're probably interested in creating an emotional, relevant, thoughtful movie.
And I think they did exactly that.
Mm-hmm. So how you mentioned opportunities that arise because of the movie. How can we use it? What's the best forum or medium for better differentiating ourselves and what we do?
That's a really good question, Matt. I can tell you the ways that the movie has been used, and it hasn't been used by us, by music therapists. But I know that, so I have fairly regular conversations with Dan Cohen, who's the founder of Music and Memory. And he let me know over the summer that this last May, I believe every member of the Texas legislature was given a copy of the movie Alive Inside. Because what's happening throughout the country is in different states, Wisconsin and Ohio are prime examples. It's through the Department of Aging or Department of Health. They have music and memory advisory groups, and they are trying to get people in other states to understand the power of music and how nursing facilities can use the music and memory program to better the lives of their residents. And that's how the movie is being used for music and memory. How music therapists can use it is by just talking about it, by actually watching the movie, developing your own opinions, and then asking people, you've seen that? That is pretty amazing, huh? And talk more about what you do as a music therapist and the reactions you see. Because we all know that music activates the brain all the way around. And if people think that personalized music listening is the bomb, then check out what clinical music therapy can do. So I think it's a good way to open the door.
And Jennifer, you know, you're making me, you know, you're reminding me, I mean, didn't we all first, and well, maybe not all of us, but I'm sure a majority of us experienced music by listening, and then that affected our lives, and that helped us carve our musical path. So for us music therapists, we started as music listeners, then we became music makers, and then we became music therapists. And so any kind of movie that talks about music, so, well, first of all, any human that experiences music can understand, you know, this is what we talk about anytime we're advocating music therapy. Everyone just understands there's something there about music that is helping us, that gives us a reaction. You know, how can we use this to help even more people? And so we have that going for us. And then when you have a film, whether you're 100% totally, it's amazing and exactly what you would say or not, it's going to touch other people. And it could be something, you know, I would be interested in knowing if we find music therapists in our country who specifically work with older adults are finding more inquiries for their services because, hey, I saw Alive Inside. I found out about this music and memory program. You know, you are a music therapist. How do we make this happen? And then it's up to us as the music therapist and the professional to work with that and to make that decision on how to keep on that conversation. And so it's a really great way to open more doors.
Exactly. And that is how AMTA came to have a music and memory work group, is because we had music therapists who were not only getting positive calls of, okay, can you implement this program? I saw it in the movie. But we were also getting the music therapists who were worried that their jobs were going to be impacted because of the easier access to recorded music rather than the expense of a clinical music therapy intervention. So one of the reasons why AMTA became more involved in the music and memory program or the idea is because we had music therapists contacting the AMTA National Office, not only with positive feedback about the movie and how can I get more involved, but also the concerns of and the worries about losing positions because of the possibility of the music listening. So the Music and Memory Work Group was created because of this. We provided, AMTA provided a panel at the 2014 National Conference that actually included Dan Cohen, who is the founder of Music and Memory. It also included Connie Tomaino, who in herself is just this incredible person in her own right, but she is also the music therapist that Dan Cohen consulted with early on when he created this program. The Music and Memory program, and this was news to me as I was getting to know Dan, the Music and Memory program was always supposed to be music therapy informed. So there's a group of music therapists in New York, where Dan is from, who are already working with this program, using this program, talking to their residents, helping to implement it, and they've become a resource for other music therapists in the area who ask questions. How do I get this on a care plan? What kind of assessment might I do for this? And so that spurred AMTA to say, okay, well, maybe we need to provide more resources for our members. So after that panel, I was charged with kind of being a point person to figure out what is it that our members need, how can we meet their needs. And so what came out from that is on the website, musictherapy.org, there is a suggestion for guidance for music listening. What we tried to do is put out all the public information that's been put out. I don't think we did all. We tried to put out in one place so that it could be the one resource to go to is, okay, oh, there's that Henry video. Okay, what else has been said about music and memory? How has AMTA been addressing music and memory? Because we put press releases out back in 2012. We put press releases out in 2014, but people still don't have all the information that they need. So we provided that. And then if you're an AMTA member, we put in the member part, here's a sample care plan, what it might look like. Hey, if you've never done a playlist before, here are some of the things you might want to look for. Here are some of the questions you might want to ask. By the way, here's this several page document of suggested reading literature for you on the topic. So we got to know more about music and memory so that we could better inform the AMTA members and the public about the differences between the two and the benefits of both, because we don't own music, and I think we all know that, there aren't enough of us to go around. And I think more and more of us are realizing that. Mm-hmm. So if we can give people the music that they desire and that they need when they need it, that's fabulous.
Yeah. And Jennifer, it's also my understanding too, that in different states, we're kind of getting state almost representatives, if you will, nothing formal, but kind of a liaison to the music and memory program in that state. Am I correct in understanding that?
Yes, you are correct. And the reason for that goes back to what I mentioned was going on with Wisconsin and Ohio. Utah also has a coalition. I think Colorado is getting a coalition. What was happening was the music and memory folks were making such great headway in their advocacy that then they found out they were in need of a music therapist. And so we have music therapists on the advisory boards or steering committees, whatever the different states are calling them, in those different states. And so as Dan Coe and I were talking about what, because the other part of AMT's involvement with music and memory was, okay, well, if there's going to be a collaboration, what might that look like? And so Dan and I have just been working together on helping each other out, because he says, I want music therapists. I want them to be involved. How can we get them involved? So one of the things he and I decided to look for would be a music therapist in each state who could serve as a contact person. And it's been wonderfully overwhelming the number of people who have stepped up and said, Jennifer, I would love to be the point person for that. Please pass my name along to Dan Cohen. And so regularly I send him an update, because the activity in the states are varied. I mean, you know that, Kimberly, just from legislatively, the activities in the states are varied. And it's kind of similar to my understanding what's happening with music and memory is you just never know what's going to percolate to the surface when. I can't tell you off the top of my head how many, quote, representatives, and it's very informal, but basically I put that music therapist in touch with Dan Cohen, and then Dan provides information based on what music and memory might be doing in that state, or providing some sort of assistance. I know that I had, well, this is on a different topic, but one of the challenges.
That's okay. We have tangents all the time.
One of the challenges was I have a music therapist fairly local to me who has called me and asked me really technical questions about the program. And I have to say, I'm sorry, I've not taken the training. We haven't even talked about that yet. And so let me put you in touch with Dan Cohen. Maybe he has someone who could provide you with that technical assistance. So it's putting people in touch with the right people to get the help they need, because Dan Cohen wants to see as many people get access to their music as possible. We want to see this program implemented safely. So let's work together to figure out how that can happen. I've had a few music therapists say, Jennifer, we just need to stop this train. We need to pull this program. We need to stop it from moving. I don't see that being beneficial for everyone. I don't even see how that would be possible without making us music therapists look really bad. But it's also that I come from a place of collaborating anyway. So I think since it's out there, since it has this award-winning documentary talking about it, that this is how we work together and move forward to make sure that everyone understands what the program is about, as well as the limitations and the concerns.
So then my question is, definitely collaboration is important, and we do want it to be safe for the consumers. But then I think what people want to know is what's in it for music therapists then, or what's in it for the profession if we're putting in this effort to kind of guide that program? Because there's definitely a mission with the Music and Memory program, and it's an admirable one, but there's also a profit motive. What is in it for music therapists to be a part of it?
It's a great question. And I think if you are an open-minded entrepreneurial music therapist, what's in it for us is more work, more information, more knowledge about what music therapy is. I think this can really open the door. And it has already for several music therapists who have thanked Dan, who have thanked us at AMTA for helping them get the word out, because they've helped with this program implementation or process. And then the staff come back and say, hey, you know, someone exhibited this behavior while they were listening to music, but we don't understand what to do with it. Could you please come and assess them and maybe provide some clinical music therapy interventions for them.
Okay.
And so, that's what we hope for.
Yeah. So everybody who's listening, I mean, it's basically, it's kind of free PR and better positioning for us to be experts in the responses to the music. Is that what I'm hearing? Do I get that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I feel. And the challenge is we have to open our minds and better educate ourselves about this program if we're going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when it comes to having not arguments, but discussions I guess whatever your argument is for music therapy, I think it comes off better when you're coming from a place of confidence and coming at it as an expert rather than when it's coming from a place of defensiveness and fear. And that's in any conversation, yep. any discussion, any argument, you know, it's yep. just, it's unbecoming to be hyper defensive.
Yeah. And unfortunately that is what has been displayed. And we're making ourselves look bad because there are panels or there will be showings of these movies in various places. And there will sometimes, not all the time, be panels for questions and answers to happen. And sometimes a music therapist is involved with that, and sometimes they're not. And sometimes a music therapist might be invited to listen and participate, but then feel the need, and rightly so, to speak up and say, okay, but we all want you to know that this isn't music therapy when the question comes up. And that doesn't tend to play very well. Dan and I have talked about how to better allow us to work together so that we all look better, so that we don't look so full of fear and aren't so defensive. And that's a challenge because people have been fearful that this was going to take away their employment opportunities. People have been fearful that this was going to cause severe harm to people who were left unattended listening. And that's the other part of the education process and the training for the Music and Memory Program as well.
Right. And so it sounds like not only has, and correct me if I'm wrong, but based on listening to you chat, Jennifer, it sounds like not only have jobs not been cut, but this film has helped to generate more work, at least in some areas.
I think that's a pretty accurate statement. I have heard from a few music therapists who have been outrightly told, oh, we already have the Music and Memory Program, we don't need you. And that can be a big slap in the face. And my only suggestion for incidences like that is, oh, so you may not need me now, but let me give you my card and maybe tell you a little bit more about what the differences are. And that can be really hard to do when someone isn't open to listening.
You know, I wish we had some videos that were just as powerful as that Henry video. I think many of us have seen that, and it is so compelling. But, I mean, the challenge is, of course, we don't have maybe we need to be a little less sheepish about asking for consent to show what we're doing in the group music environments. Because I know, Jennifer, you work in that field, and I have worked in skilled nursing facilities and in hospice, and have been in so many facilities, and it's equally compelling. And so many times I've wished, gosh, if I had just had a cameraman here, you know, it would have been, right. It's just incredible. So I don't, maybe there needs to be a little bit more of an effort to have the ability to show what we're doing with live music.
Right. And you know, one of the things that this has spurred in me, Matt, is as I look through my Facebook feed and people will post, whether it's news coverage, positive news media coverage, accurate news media coverage, or just something that they did get consent to post on the website, I've seen people post some really lovely videos. And I've been trying to toy with the idea of, okay, how could I compile those and where can I put them so that people could, hey, this is evidence of clinical music therapy, because I think that's an excellent idea. You know, we have The Music Never Stopped. There's one movie that I'm losing the name of right now, but there's another film that I don't think anyone knows of. And it's called You're Looking at Me Like I Live Here and I Don't. And it's actually about this woman who has Alzheimer's and lives in an Alzheimer's facility. And I was fortunate enough to get filmed briefly with some live music intervention. And it shows how the people react. It shows how this woman reacts just in general, how music is an important part of her life anyway. But films like that don't necessarily, it was an independent film and it doesn't necessarily have the big PR push behind it as Alive Inside does. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a challenge too, is how do we get the word out about what we do?
Yes. And it's, and on a little bit of a side note there, we're going to have to find that movie and link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I might find have a link. I'll look for it and send it to you. Unless you guys
fantastic.
All right. And everybody, after you watch it, post it to your Facebook, post it, send it out to your, you know, on your email list, whatever you have. So, I mean, that's how things go viral, right? Don't be shy about sharing good things as opposed to whatever the new entertainment stuff is or whatever, you know, advocate on social media. And we've talked about that in previous episodes too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's something I'm learning about, so is advocating on social media. So I just joined Instagram and I'm on Pinterest.
Ooh.
Look out, world.
And Jira just joined Twitter, I believe, over the summer or last spring, right?
I actually joined Twitter when I was running for president-elect because I felt like that was a good time for me to do that. And so as I'm preparing to be president, I just signed up on Instagram last night. I got on Pinterest a few weeks ago. So I'm not sure I'm doing anything major on anything yet, but I've got it. And, and I'm looking forward
to playing with it.
Yeah,
that's right. And I'm how can people find you? What's that?
How can people find you? What are you? What's your?
So my
what are you?
Am I?
What?
I
who are you?
We're getting down to the brass tacks now.
Well, I will tell you, I made it easy for everyone. That anytime you want to get a hold of me, it's going to be Jennifer MTBC, and it's two N's. So my Twitter handle is at Jennifer MTBC, and same thing with Instagram and. Well, Pinterest might be different. It might be Jennifer Geiger.
Okay.
Fantastic. Well, I have, and I can't speak for Michelle or Matt, but I do have one final question. And that is, if there is one piece of advice or tidbit or what have you that you would like to share with our listeners as it relates to music and memory and music therapy, what would that be?
I think what it would be is to ask folks to think about how you use music on a daily basis, to think about all the different ways you use music, and then imagine that you don't have access to your music anymore for whatever reason, that you don't have that daily access to the music that speaks to you. Imagine what that would feel like. And then imagine what would happen if you had an angel come and talk to you about finding out what your favorite music is and creating a list of those favorite songs, and then you can actually get to listen to your music. And that's what music and memory is about. And I think as music therapists, we understand the impact of music on for ourselves and for our clients. So just a shift in perspective is what I would ask for. And then Do the work, educate yourself, find out about, you know, I didn't even talk about the music and memory training. It's actually very brief. It's three webinars and it talks mostly about how to use iTunes and how to create a playlist. And there's a little bit on how to find out what someone likes and just a tiny bit on how music affects people. But it's mostly about the tech part because the hope is to have volunteers come in and create these playlists and to provide the music, to do it basically as fast as possible, just so that these people aren't suffering from a dearth of their music. Mm-hmm. But where music therapists come in is we can fine tune it and we can talk a little bit about, okay, let's make sure that there's someone listening with them so that if this person is a fall risk and then they're in their wheelchair and they hear some big band music and they want to get up and dance, make sure to be near them so that they don't fall or so that you can engage them. There are a lot of different ways that music therapists can be involved in this process. And it's just making sure you understand what the program is and what it's not, and advocating for what you can do differently as a music therapist and how you can enhance this. And going back to thinking what it would be like to not have your own music and then how to have people get access to theirs.
Beautiful.
Fantastic.
Thanks for that excellent summary, Jennifer. I just got one last question. Can you talk a little bit about the training and facility certification for music and memory?
You bet. So the way this has been set up is Dan's idea is that the Music and Memory Program would be a gold standard of care for elders. So let me tell you a little bit more about that. So if you think about going into a nursing facility, and sometimes there are stickers on the front door that will say JCO certified or CMS certified or some sort of special program, pet therapy given here, something. And Dan's idea was, well, if a facility becomes certified in the Music and Memory Program, that should be an indicator that the people at this facility are willing to go above and beyond basic care for elders. So when he looks at the training, he does not train individuals. And I actually really admire that, because what he wants to see is a facility who wants to change the culture of care. So when the training is provided, these three webinars, when the training is provided, it's provided to staff at the facility. So it would include CNAs, it would include dietitians, it would include nurses, it would include the activity staff, it would include social workers, admission staff. They want it to be cross-disciplinary. Oh, and the tech person, whoever's doing their IT, would be great to have in that training as well. Uh-huh. And if you have a music therapist who consults, bring the music therapist into the training. So everyone has the same basic level of information on the program. So I had, after doing the concurrent session at the national conference, I had a lot of music therapists say, I want the training. Where can I get the training? And so I emailed Dan and let him know that this was a need. He was so excited that music therapists were interested in the training and moving forward. He said, I'm really committed to only training facilities, because you have to have everyone on the same page. Even if you have a music therapist who goes in there with the knowledge, unless you have everyone trained in how to use the program, it can be really hard to get that up and running mm-hmm. without the basic knowledge. So, you know, initially we were asking Dan, could, you know, because board certified, facilities certified, you know, that's going to be different and hard for the public. And he's really come back with, you know, really, it's the facility, it's not individuals. This shouldn't be a scary thing. Music therapists are totally different. So what I've talked with about with another music therapist about is, the facility has already received the training, and this music therapist contracts with them, but he has not received the training. And so my understanding with Dan is that this person could go through the training because the facility is already music and memory certified. I don't know the particulars of that. And I know that there are a lot of music therapists who want to be trained. If you want to find a facility that's already music and memory certified, there's a whole list of them. It's at musicandmemory.org, and I think it's under the About tab, and it will say certified facilities, and there's a list that goes by state. I was talking with some folks in Oregon, and they know some of those facilities that are already music and memory certified, so they're looking forward to talking to those facilities and saying, hey, can we get access to the training so that we can all be on board with this?
I see. Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Jennifer, I really want to thank you for coming on the show today. I think it will bring a lot of clarity to a lot of folks. And you brought up a really good point. Like, people need to see the movie to form an opinion about it. And then also really look into this program and understand what opportunities we have, not just what potential drawbacks what those could be. So thanks for coming on. And I'd want to invite listeners to comment on this, either on our blog where we'll post this, or on Facebook, and let us know what other questions you have, that maybe if we ever had a chance to do a follow-up. And then we'll also post all of those links that we talked about in the show notes. We'll link to the best practices for music and memory, which is on the musictherapy.org, the AMTA website, and then also to Music and Memory, and maybe a little information about the film as well.
That would be great. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate the opportunity to share this information with everybody.
So to build even more on what Jennifer has told us in this podcast, we want to connect it with our cool resource of the month, and that is the Best Practices for Music and Memory Programs Guide. It's a information that you can find on the AMTA website. So just go to musictherapy.org and search music and memory. Or you can just go to our show notes and find that link, and then you'll find all that information that Jennifer had referenced in the podcast about the program and all those other little things to help you continue with your advocacy of music therapy. We'd like to give a shout out to our Pro Perk partners. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Metro Music Therapy's paper, music therapy ebooks, music therapy mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, the Music Therapy Research Blog, Listen and Learn, Music Therapy Maven, Bear Paw Creek, and Session Cafe. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for joining us. To see the show notes, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com. If you liked this podcast, take your skills to the next level by visiting Music Therapy Pro. Although currently under construction, very soon you can have unlimited access to almost a dozen CMTEs. Check it out at www.musictherapypro.com. And thank you for listening to another episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable podcast.